Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the Stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.
Hello, and welcome to the Body Protest Podcast, a new intersectional body image podcast that takes a deep dive into our often complicated, occasionally treacherous relationships with our bodies. We want to figure out how we can all feel more at home in our bodies and what it will take to create a world that fosters positive body image. I'm Honey Ross.
And I'm Nadia Craddock. In each episode, we'll be combining storytelling with science to discuss body image, so how we feel about how we look in relation to our weight, shape, race, skin colour, physical ability, sexuality, mental health, and whatever else comes up.
This podcast is brought to you by the Pink Protest.
So this episode, I think, is going to be really great. We are going to be talking about dieting, how diet culture is trash, and learning more about intuitive eating with registered nutritionist and friend of the podcast, Laura Thomas, PhD.
So Laura published a book earlier this year called Just Eat It, and it's this incredible tonic to all the lies we've been sold, that being thin is the gateway to being happy and successful and desirable.
And I also think with the diet culture thing, the whole idea that if we can, it's like, we can all be thin if only we try hard enough,
yeah,
right? Like, it's that, like, it's all about discipline.
Like, and, like, baby girl, my body is not built like that and it never will be.
Sorry to break it to you.
Yeah, I mean, if diets work long term, the diet industry wouldn't be profitable. The industry is literally built on failure.
Like, our bodies are, like, definitely designed to be diverse, like, in shape and size, and not just, like, same, like, diversity in terms of, like, shape and size as in terms of, like, height, right? Like,
yeah, I mean, it's so weird. Yeah. How could we expect anyone to, I mean, how have we all been sold the same beauty standard for so long when it's like, well, obviously I'm never going to look like Kate Moss and I wouldn't want to. I mean, she's gorgeous, that's her vibe, but it's not mine.
Okay, before we get to Laura, and I know we've had lots of conversations about this, but been much of a dieter, honey?
Oof, I have been on so many stupid diets. I mean, I was on Weight Watchers when I was about 14, which is super healthy. Love that lifestyle. I mean,
it's kind of frightening, isn't it?
Isn't it frightening? I know, like, that you learn to hate yourself from such a young age. And then I was on keto when I was about 17 until I didn't eat carbs for 3 years. I was on keto for 3 years. It was miserable. I mean, like, pasta is my favorite food, so, like, what do you do with that? I mean, absolute hell. But I'm free from it now. I don't even have scales in my house. Like, it is so liberating not being on any kind of diet and just doing whatever you want. What about you?
I don't know. I'm still just thinking of, like, Weight Watchers at 14. I'm not over it. I don't remember, like, formally dieting. I remember looking. It's a bizarre thing, and I think we have to be careful. Like, eating disorders are not just about dieting, but we also know that, like, dieting is a risk factor for eating disorders.
Totally.
Right? Like, and all eating disorders, not just anorexia. It's like every eating disorder, like, has facets of, like, restrictive dieting within it. Yeah, I think, like, what I kind of vaguely remember is, like, obviously, like, there are all of these kind of, like, crazy diets going on and, like, all these different trends, like, celebrity diets and stuff. And I just remember looking at them and then, like, picking and choosing different bits of information. So it wasn't, like, I'm going to follow X diet. It would be, like, I would just be, like, oh, okay, I'm going to use this, like, you know, this information, and I'm going to be, like, better, because I'm better than the diet. I'm better than the diet. I'll just do whatever. I'll make up my own rules, yeah, you know, like, whatever.
Make my own diet up.
And it was, like, it was so nonsensical, because I would have a set of rules, and they would just switch. Like, it'd be, like, complete pivot. Like, wow. Complete pivot. And it'd be, but I would, like, completely be, like, this is the way I like, will eat, and I, like, would eat that way. And then, I don't know, something would, like, knock in, like, like, I don't know, like, sugar the bad thing. And like, at the time, I'd literally just been eating, like, Pick a Mix or something. And yeah. I'd be like, oh, shit, I need to now. And it would just, like, yeah, it would completely flip. And it was, like, none of it made any sense whatsoever.
Fuck.
But again, it's, like, it's very weird looking back to what I thought was, like, because I think it, you know, obviously, and I always think this is interesting when it comes to dieting, because I feel like I know a lot of, like, very bright, intelligent people.
Yeah.
And yet they come up with the most utter BS
to dieting. Well, like, I mean, I love my parents. My parents are brilliant and successful and wonderful, but they were on diets their whole lives and are still dieting to this day. I think they're still trying to do keto, God bless them. I'm like, guys.
Yeah, and they're, like, literally, like, the most incredible, successful, like, powerhouse couple incredible things.
But it kind of shows you how deep it goes. Like, it's not... I mean, like, I hope they don't kill me for being like, my parents are dieting. But, like, you know, I know so many incredible people who kind of still low-key hate themselves and are dieting. And it's like, not that those two things correlate, but I kind of think they do.
But like, I think it's like, you just want to believe it, don't you? You just want to believe that you can change and better yourself. And it's not, it might not even be, but I think it's like better yourself in terms of aesthetic, but also better yourself in terms of like, I just want to be the healthiest I can be and like live this like long life. And actually we don't have that control over our
health. Especially with things like clean eating, which I think Laura's going to talk about a bit. It's so interesting that kind of, we've talked about this before, but that kind of thing of language and like how we use language around food and saying food is clean is so damaging, because we're like, well, there's no such, food isn't dirty, there's not dirty food. I mean, like, unless you're like, yeah, wash your vegetables before you eat them, but like apart from that, the food's not dirty, you're not a bad person for eating something.
I know, and I just think there's like that whole idea of like, what you eat isn't like, the amount of change it's gonna have on your life, like, oh, you know, like, I don't know, I just think it's, like, you're not gonna, I don't know, have this, like, huge control, like, you're not gonna suddenly control your entire health by, like, what you eat, and I think that, like, people do latch onto that, and I remember once being in a car with a friend who's, like, literally got a PhD from MIT, and, like, in chemistry, like, so, like,
no big
like,
deal.
I know, like, the smartest, and was, like, convincing me, like, how keto was, like, the best thing on earth, and I was, like, and trying to tell me the science behind it, and I was, like, hang on, like, what? This is, like, very...
And, like, look, the fact is keto works. Like, you lose a lot of weight on it, but at what cost? I mean, like, gave me so many issues around food. It made my... Like, I mean, I was a 20-year-old looking at a menu and being like, I'm terrified of pasta, I'm terrified of potatoes, and I don't know how to express this. Like, I'm absolutely... It's ridiculous. I'm like... I'm a smart young woman and I was absolutely petrified to eat a bowl of spaghetti for 4 years. Like, that's not normal. Yeah. Like, and I'd kind of been like, no, this is fine. I'm just like low-key phobic of carbs after coming off keto.
And like, what's the health consequence of that? Like, I didn't know. I just think it's like, that's not okay. Like, that's not okay.
Yeah, I mean, it's not ideal.
No, not ideal. Anyway, I think we should get to Laura because she will tell us some of the science around nutrition.
She will be more informed than we are. So this is Laura. Self-love is true love. Honour the most important relationship in your life, yourself. Our sponsor, Womanizer, believes that every person has the right to pleasure and self-love, regardless of age, sexuality, size and colour.
A wonderful way to learn to appreciate your body is through self-pleasure. Masturbation is a truly joyful way to connect with your body and learn to feel comfortable in your skin. Everyone should feel able to feel comfortable in their body and explore their own sexual needs and desires. In this house, we see masturbation as the purest form of self-love.
Unlike other vibrators, Womanizer products stimulate with soft pressure waves. It is stimulation without touch, meaning there is no chance of overstimulation or loss of sensitivity. Get yourself your very own Womanizer at womanizer.com/UK so you can light a candle, run a bath and have a mind-blowing night of sexy self-care. I would love you to tell us a bit about yourself. I know that you're kind of from the school of thought of intuitive eating, which, right. You know, I don't know that much about, but from what I gather, it's kind of the anti-diet. Would you talk to me a bit about that?
Yeah, it 1000% is the anti-diet. And so maybe I should just preface it with the fact that I'm a registered nutritionist. I have a PhD in nutritional sciences, and I'm also studying an MSc in eating disorders and clinical nutrition at UCL. So I just wanted to throw that in there, not as like a humble brag, but just to let everyone but more just to let people know that like I'm coming at this from a legit place.
Yeah.
So
it's important. We like receipts on this.
No, we 100%.
So I wanted maybe I should start by explaining what intuitive eating is. So it is a concept that originated in the 90s with two dietitians, Evelyn Tribbley and Elise Resch, who I've had the great pleasure of training with. And it is a set of 10 principles, kind of a framework to help guide people away from rigid diets and restrictive eating and disordered eating towards a place where they're eating according to the messages and the signals that their body is sending them. So moving away and disconnecting from diet tools and external rules and learning to let your body kind of guide the way. And that sounds kind of woo, but if we think about it, we're all born with this ability, right? Like you don't see a kid in their high chair tracking their macros. They just, when they're hungry, they scream the house down. When they're done, they start like throwing food off their high chairs. They clamp their mouths down. They turn their heads away. They let you know that they're done. And if you present them with a variety of different foods, they'll kind of pick and mix a little bit of everything. But over time, through whether it's like well-intentioned, well-meaning messages from parents and family about like cleaning your plate before you're done or, you know, making or eating your vegetables before you can go out and play or messages about your body. These things compounded by diet culture kind of undermine our ability to regulate our own food intake and we lose trust and start to essentially disconnect from the messages that our bodies are sending us.
How do you reconnect to that? I mean, I feel like that's probably the whole book and we can all find out if we read the book, but what's the kind of elevator pitch of how you reconnect to your body and learn the signals?
Yeah, so like I said, it's a framework of 10 principles. And I would just like put it out there before ever, because I see this happen a lot. People are like, well, I'm not dieting anymore, therefore I must be eating intuitively. And it's not quite as straightforward as that. It really is an iterative process. So it requires a bit of time. It requires a bit of practice. And I know everyone's like time poor at the moment, but I think it's really worth that investment. So, you know, really spending some time figuring out what intuitive eating looks like for you, because it's different on Nadia than it is on you, than it is on me. And that's fine. Like it's supposed to be a flexible framework. In terms of how you get started though, and like how you begin to work through those principles, the first, and I'd say the kind of anchor point of intuitive eating is ditching the diets and kind of basically schooling yourself on diet culture, why diets don't work, getting rid of diet tools and these external influences over our eating, which can sound kind of frightening if you've been used to like tracking and counting everything. And so it's okay if that takes a little bit of time, but kind of in tandem with that, can you be reading some stuff about why diets don't work? Can you be looking at some stuff around body acceptance or fat positivity or these other concepts that kind of can rewire those parts of our brains that think that diets are good and that not dieting is going to lead you down this path of destruction?
Right.
Yeah, I think it's nice that intuitive eating doesn't look the same with like every single person. Yeah. I think especially if you've come from a place of diet mentality that you're like, okay, I need to follow this plan and then I will get this result. But I think if you're then trying to be like, oh, I'm shifting to a new way of eating, it's like, how do I get it right? And how am I doing it in the best possible way?
Yeah. It seems lovely that it's not a one size fits all kind of diet. Well, it's not a diet,
right?
But it's kind of, you know, I mean, I was like, that's incorrect. But like, you know, everybody's different. So it would make sense that everybody eats differently intuitively.
Yeah. And just to kind of tie that back to the sort of science and research, what we know is from a psychological perspective is that the process of going through intuitive eating, and Nadia will know more about this than I do, but learning to be flexible like that, it promotes psychological flexibility instead of psychological sort of rigidity or that all or nothing mentality that we can often get really caught up in. And I know that's the target of a lot of psychological interventions. Nadia's like nodding.
Well, yeah, I think we want to, you know, not be like so bounded by like rules that we put on ourselves, and like rules, who's made the rules? Who put them on us though?
Like, it's not us. You
know, I make my own rules, please. Thank you very much. So I think it's interesting because I obviously we've spoken in a professional context a good number of times now, either by podcast or panels. And I wonder, if we can go a bit more personal, like what your, how you've kind of moved to intuitive eating and like an anti-diet approach, and have you always been quite anti-diet in your outlook?
I was coming from it from this perspective that I was like, oh, but I have science on my side, and I would curate these like seemingly perfect meals that were like low in oil and gluten-free, and I would like really focus on the minutia of detail of like, well, this whatever carrot has this, like this obscure micronutrient that might like slightly enhance the glow of your skin or some crap, because I'd found this really just niche study. I linked to the abstract in PubMed and I was like, that's fine, it's science. But then on the other hand, I was really struggling with my own disordered eating. And so I would spend weekends like, you know, perfectly curating these recipes and taking pictures and doing all the fact checking and all of that stuff. And then I'd like faceplant into some Ben and Jerry's at night. And and everything that comes loaded with that cycle, right? Which is the guilt and the shame and the judgment and the sort of, especially when you're a nutritionist as well, because you're the person that's supposed to get it right. Yeah. And if I don't even have my shit together around food, then, you know, what else is going on with other people who, you know, I don't know. Like, I don't even want to speculate on that. So I came across the concepts, actually, first of all, came across the concept of health at every size. And having sort of struggled with my weight as a teenager and even younger than that, it really, really resonated with me, and it just felt so liberating that there were people studying this, and there was another way to operate besides constantly thinking about your body shape and size and what you were putting in and how much you were exercising and that whole calories in, calories out.
Yeah. It's like groundbreaking. I can just exist without punishing myself.
Yeah.
Wild.
It's like, it shouldn't be as radical as it is. And so I came to that initially, and then I still kind of was like, a diet culture nutritionist, if that is a label that I can apply to people. And it took me a while to really connect all the dots between some of the other things that I was saying and doing, and kind of doing my own work, basically, I think is really what I was doing, you know, reflecting back on it now. And then when I started my clinical practice, I was more just focused on general nutrition stuff and like eat more plants. And it wasn't until I started seeing other people and seeing those same patterns that I'd saw in myself in other people that I like the penny dropped. And I was like, oh, this isn't just me. This is so many women in particular. And that's when I kind of thought back to health at every size and intuitive eating, and went off and did retraining and really learned about it, did my research. I started talking about it on my own podcast and on my platforms and developed a course, and there was just so much demand for it. Like people were really, really ready to just break out of diet prison. Even if that diet was called wellness, it's kind of just a different permutation of the same thing.
No, but I love that. I love that expression, diet prison, because that is what it feels like. It's so kind of all encompassing. You are completely trapped in it. And also it's hard to see that you're in it sometimes.
Totally is, yeah.
Especially if you think you're trying to do the right thing. I guess that kind of leads on to the next question.
I don't know, because I think something that I struggle with when I'm talking to people about dieting is, or why we shouldn't diet, maybe more to the point, is is when people hold on to an element of science. And now I am not a nutrition scientist. Mm. So when someone starts saying science at me about nutrition, like, oh, this is a really good diet because it does this to your insides.
Yeah.
I'm like, or my only response is like, well, what does it do to your mind? Like how are you feeling? But like, yeah. I think there's so many different diets, and there's elements of fact or science within it.
Right.
But then how do you reconcile, and then how do you actually spot what is Nutribullets, where it's kind of gone to that extreme and it doesn't make any sense.
So I should just say, ultimately, yes, Nadia's right. I'm still a nutritional scientist at the end of the day. Like, I'm saying that diets don't work. I'm not saying nutrition isn't important. It's not something that we need to consider. But we also need to, and this speaks to your point, Nadia, is nutrition needs to have its rightful place as something that is important in our lives, but it's not all consuming. Mm-hmm. And when, you know, sort of in the murky depths of diet culture, nutrition becomes all consuming. So just to kind of bring it back to the framework of intuitive eating, I said that one anchor on one side was ditching diets and ditching diet culture. On the other side, we have what's called gentle nutrition. Mm-hmm. And that's the very last step in the intuitive eating process. Now, somewhere in the middle is making peace with food and challenging the food police. So that is the bit where we really just unpack all the Nutribullets, all the myths and misconceptions around food and nutrition, and kind of really try and break that all or nothing mm-hmm. mentality mm. that we often have about foods. And towards the end, once we've kind of dismantled that, we can come at nutrition from a perspective where it's not all or nothing, it's not black and white, where we've really learned that actually there is no such thing as a perfect diet. Nutrition is important, but so is sleep, so is your mm-hmm. mental health, so is movement, so is going to the doctor and taking your medicines and getting checkups. And, you know, apart from anything else, your socioeconomic status is the biggest determinant of your health anyway. So let's not forget that. But that, you know, yes, nutrition is important, but so are all of these other things. And ultimately, if we are obsessed and focused on the minutiae of detail around nutrition and, you know, just really obsessed with nutrition, that to the point that it causes us stress and anxiety if we perceive that we've messed up, mm-hmm. then that's also not healthy, right? So for mm-hmm. instance, there was a great meta-analysis that came out, I think it was last year, that showed that anxiety was causative of type 2 diabetes, right? So if we're anxious about something, that's also not great for our health. Even we could be eating the most, you know, meticulous salad that ever came, you know, that was ever conceived. Yeah. But if we're anxious because it's got like a tiny bit of oil in it or something, then that's also really not good for us.
Right. And so how...
Did that answer your question?
Yeah, it did, but I have a follow-up.
Okay.
Because how, as a non-nutrition scientist,
yeah,
if someone is telling me something is based on science, like you should eat in this way and with this pattern,
mm-hmm.
Because it's based on science. Science tells you it's... Like, how do you spot that?
The red flags, right. What are the red flags? Okay, so there are a couple of different responses to this. And I don't think there is any singular answer. And we mm-hmm. need to kind of look at all of these things together to get the whole picture. So the first thing that you can do is check qualifications and credentials. So in the UK, what you would be looking for is a registered dietitian or a registered nutritionist with the Association for Nutrition. That's the first thing.
Of the people like who are selling selling a diet. Or like,
well, if they're selling a diet, get the fuck out of there, right? Like if they're promising you weight loss, that's a major red flag right there, because diets don't work, which, spoiler, right? But they're, you know, we have really robust evidence and data that not only do they not work, they're actually a predictor of future weight gain. Not that there's anything wrong with gaining weight. It's a mm-hmm. normal biological thing, but it just sort of underscores the futility of dieting. It's also a risk factor for disordered eating and eating disorders. Mm-hmm. It's been linked to increases in visceral adipose tissue, which is the type of fat that accumulates around your abdomen mm-hmm. and around your internal organs. So whereas we know that the type of fat that you just get like on your arms and your hips and your upper thighs, that type of fat is subcutaneous fat, and it's relatively benign. So it's not really that big a deal versus the visceral fat, which accumulates around like your internal organs. And you can have that no matter what size you are. Okay. So that's right. Not linked to BMI necessarily.
That's so interesting.
So, so there are all these, you know, dieting is not risk-free. It's not benign. And if someone is promising you weight loss, ask to see the studies that back that up. Ask for references. And, you know, just to give you some more context, just for, you know, I'll give you some studies while we're talking about it. But there's this really interesting meta-analysis. So a meta-analysis is a type of study that pulls together a bunch of smaller studies so that it's basically got more clout. And what it found, it took all these studies that looked at things like Slimming World and Weight Watchers, all these kind of standardized kind of diets that people
commercial
do.
Ones.
Commercial yeah. ones, that's the mm-hmm. word, thank you. So basically, what it found was that people on these commercial weight loss programs, which, side note, are available on the NHS, 60% of the people who enrolled in this study failed to lose the 5% of weight loss that was their target. So they failed to lose the quote unquote clinically significant amount of weight loss in the first place, right?
Wow.
So only 40% actually lost weight. And if we take that into consideration with another sort of earlier study, another meta-analysis that found that people regained 80% of the weight that they lost after 5 years, that's assuming that they're not doing more dieting and other things, yeah. right? So 40% of people lose weight, and of that 40%, 80% is gained back anyway.
It's ridiculous.
It's really, really, really low. It's a really low number. And so, yeah, if someone is trying to sell you mm-hmm. weight loss, that's another major red flag. So check receipts, ask for evidence, and then cross-check what they're saying with something sensible. Like, it's not sexy advice, but go cross-check what they're saying on the NHS website. Check it on, there's a great website called Science Based Medicine. Mm-hmm. I can give you a couple of links, but looking at the British Dietetic Association, looking at the British Nutrition Foundation, looking at reputable organizations for what they say about nutrition. Like, if it strays way too off to the, you know, off the beaten path, and you know, ultimately, and I'm sorry, I hope I don't break anyone's hearts when I say this, but nutritional science has not changed very much in the past 50 years. We have a fairly good idea of what, you know, a diet that supports health looks like. And it's not likely to change anytime in the future. So we know that eating fresh fruits, or actually any fruits and vegetables, whether fresh, frozen, tinned, whatever, it's all good to dried. So eating fruits and vegetables, eating some whole grains, eating some beans and pulses, a couple of portions of oily fish a week if you eat fish, and dairy or a dairy alternative that's fortified with calcium, not just a milked almond like that you make at home. And I can say that because I'm vegan, so.
You make your own almond milk.
No, because it's not fortified. And also, who has time and money? And it's a big problem. But yeah, you know, you need to get your iodine and your mm-hmm. calcium and your B12 from somewhere. So, you know, we know, and meat, if you eat meat, yeah, great. The fundamentals of what constitutes a healthy diet, I'm afraid to say, is not likely to change anytime soon. It's not some magic potion or elixir. There is no like silver bullet panacea in the form of turmeric powder. It's just not a thing.
Right. Because I think that's the thing where like someone will be like, oh yeah, have like, or yeah.
Be
have,
very prescriptive. Yeah.
Like, oh, have like, a good one goji big thing yeah. or.
A goji berry.
Yeah.
But also.
Or like gluten free or like yeah, whatever.
Absolutely.
It is, like,
but also on the flip side of this, I have to say that you know, with it, I just listed all these, you know, what people would consider to be healthy foods. Mm. I don't like labels. However, in my sort of food pyramid that I share with clients that's in my book, there is a big space in there for fun foods and social eating and mindful eating and conviviality and all of those other things which we know are so important. You know, it's not just about what you eat, but it's how you eat, and it's about enjoying your food. And just because a food is nutritious doesn't mean that it can't be tasty and, you know, satisfying and bring you pleasure. Like, you know, it's... we're past rice crackers, people.
Yeah. That's such a lovely approach. That's so lovely. Actually, you know what? That kind of brings us onto a question we are dying to know, which is...
What's your favourite snack? We were talking about this before you came in, and then...
we were like, let's do some fun palate cleanser questions. Like, what is the snack that's giving you life at the moment?
Okay.
Especially if it's a fun food. Yeah, it doesn't have to be a fun food.
I love just like, all food should be fun. I love that.
Yeah, well, that's it. Because actually,
So, okay, if I'm working with someone, I don't usually give meal plans because they're kind of against the point of intuitive eating. But if I'm working with someone who has had really disordered eating or is in recovery from an eating disorder, I will give them a sort of rough kind of template, a meal plan that they need to stick to. And we always say, you know, you need your fat, you need your protein, you need your carb, you need a fiber and a dairy component, and you need a fun food, right? Yeah. And that has to be in there. So anyway, that was a side note. Okay. But
that just warms my soul.
No.
I'm so happy.
But that's how my mind works all things. I want to like check these things off and then be like, and fun food, check.
Yeah. Like one potato smiley. It's fun.
I couldn't find, I was in Sainsbury's the other day looking for potato smileys and I couldn't find them. Is this a thing?
If Brexit ruins our potato smiley, like, supply, I'm going to scream.
No, we got waffles instead. It's not all lost.
Not so, thanks to Brexit or not. Not related to Brexit.
So I don't know if this is necessarily my favorite snack. However, I have a friend, you might have heard of her. Her name is Izzy Hossack. She is a very talented cookbook author and blogger. She has two books. And in her first book, she has these granola cookies that are like smothered in dark chocolate. So it's like blended up like dates and maple syrup with Rice Krispies and oats. And like you smoosh them all together. They're like no bake as well, which is super easy.
The more you're talking, the more I'm getting into it.
Yeah.
At first I was like, granola.
You're like, no thanks. No,
but they're delicious.
I love that you're vegan. You have to get really creative with your snacks. So like crack out the dark chocolate, crack out the dates. Like one of my best friends is vegan and I'm so admire the like creativity that goes into like making the fun foods.
Yeah, but I'm not above like going and buying a packet of crisps either.
Oh yeah.
But yeah, that's what I've been, or either that or like making my own granola bars with chocolate chips in them. But we also in clinic at so my clinic is called London Center for Intuitive Eating, we have like our snack stations, and so everyone gets offered a snack when they come in, and we have like a whole host of things. So we have like Oreos and love corn. Have you seen love corn?
What's love corn?
It's just like roasted corn, and they come in all these great flavors. So there's like a barbecue flavor, there's a habanero flavor, and there's like a ready salted one, which is just like really salty. And I'm like really into salt.
No, me too. I'm salt. But what, is it like popcorn, but not?
It's not popcorn. It's like, so it's not popped. It's the actual kernels, and they're roasted, but not that like I've had corn that's like breaks your teeth. Right. It's not like that at all. It's like crunchy, like crisps almost.
Ooh.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. And then
like salivating like a dog
now. I know. I feel like I should have
brought snacks with me.
You made a huge thing.
We'll start doing
you
that.
Bring snacks.
We were talking about our favorite snacks, and then I thought, I can't tell.
Oh, yeah. I want to know, what are your favorite snacks?
Well, I mean, I have many, but my current, because I love to share, I'm a big sharer. So also for context, my mum is one of eight, and so her thing in our household is that she hates to share because of the child she had to share with everyone. I mean, like, can you imagine sharing with seven other people?
Yeah,
and
no.
She was like the eldest girl, so like the obligation on her was to share.
That's too much pressure.
So then she has like her designated snacks. That you just
she's very protective, but we're
like, snacks. You do not touch my mum's snacks, but they're always the most desirable snacks in the house, just because they're like, you know,
they're like the elite labeled snack. You're like, I want it because I can't have it.
However, so I mean that's like home snacks, but my current favorite snack is at work because nobody else likes it. So I'm like taking after my mum with like, you know, I keep going on about how I love to share, but then actually I really love it when other people when other people do not like the snack that I like. So I get it all. And so we found in the office, it was like discarded because it was so vile. But it's like white chocolate, hot chocolate. And it's amazing.
So good.
Everyone else hates
Why?
It.
Why?
I don't know. I don't know what's wrong with people, but it's incredible. And so every time I have it, I'm like, oh, who wants some of this? Let's go round. Who wants it? No one wants any. And it's like, oh, well, more for
me. Oh, well. That is the best of both because you get the pleasure of coming off as like a really selfless person. Like, please have my hot chocolate, but you know no one wants it. So you're like, more for me.
It's great, but I'm really enjoying
that's
that.
That's just win-win-win.
It's gonna die a death at some point because that's how I am with my snacks. I really enjoy something. But at a certain point, and then I'm like, no, I need to move on.
Do you overdo it like a song?
Yeah.
Exactly, like, I've listened to this too much time. Exactly, I've drank this hot chocolate too much.
But that's like a pair of trousers. Like, yeah. I'll like love it, and then I'm like, love it. And I'm like, no.
How about it? What was I thinking?
We had peanut naked bars in.
No.
Yeah, in the office, I bought like just a crate of them. They're so good. They're so. Have you tried them?
No.
Oh, they're like the love new naked flavors. Bars.
No.
Honestly, so good.
Stop.
But. We've kind of burned ourselves out because we're eating so much.
You see it and you're like, I can't even look at you. No, it's like looking at a sext after you've sent it. You're like, get that away from me. Disgusting.
Sorry, that's too personal.
But it's real. We know it's real.
What's your favourite snack?
Well, I was going to say this. There's this really specific Mexican snack that I've been really enjoying, but which is like pulped tamarind. And it's like spicy and sweet and salty. And it's amazing. And I stockpiled it when I was in Disney Mexico because I'm a child. But actually probably my favorite snack of all time is like a strawberry cable that you get at like Cinema Pick and Mix.
Yeah.
Like I can really just eat strawberry cables at any time and an inappropriate amount and I will just do it. They are my favorite thing in the world.
And they definitely constitute like a fun snack.
Oh, that's a fun snack. That's so a party food.
Yeah, that is a party food. Yeah. How much fun can you know? You can play with that.
Yeah, because you can tighten a knot. You can tighten a bow.
And even just having it hanging down from your mouth is just like
suck it up like a noodle.
Yeah,
it's comical.
Endless fun. Comical. Yeah, it's comedy genius. Yeah, so that's my favorite snack.
Hunger can kind of show up in various different places in our bodies. So we often just think of hunger as like that pit of our stomach rumbling, that like gnawing sensation. Mm-hmm. But it can be shifts in our mood. So if we start getting kind of hangry, mm-hmm. if we get kind of cranky and snappy at people, shifts in our energy level. So even if we've had a bad night or a good night's sleep, but we're just drained, like mm-hmm. actually maybe you need to eat. So yeah, mood, energy level, concentration, focus. If you've got a headache, and I know that if you're dehydrated, like very dehydrated, you can sometimes get a headache. Mm. But you can also get migraines are triggered by low blood sugar as well. So yeah, so that's something to keep in mind. But the headache that I'm kind of talking about in regards to hunger is slightly different, just kind of behind that. Eyes, and you can very quickly, you know, if you eat something, the headache starts to get better. So
good tip. I didn't know that.
Head meaning like concentration, focus, mm-hmm. as well as like the physical sensations, energy, mood, your stomach. But if you've got that really deep pit of your belly growling, to me that's an indication that you've probably gone past gentle hunger into that over hungry phase, mm-hmm. which is when mm-hmm. you're at risk of just like, you know, whatever, eating whatever, whenever, like with no sort of awareness of how it actually feels. And the final one is just general body sensations. Like, do you feel kind of weak? Do you feel kind of shaky and have that sort of sensation of low blood sugar? So we need to think about hunger a bit more broadly. Mm-hmm. And that can be like a really overly cognitive process when you're learning intuitive eating sort of the first time around, but obviously this stuff becomes kind of second nature. Like you don't have to think about it quite so much, you know, when you get more in touch with those signals.
When I was a teenager, I found it really interesting because I kind of would eat a lot and people would be like, oh, you're bored of eating, you're eating because you're bored. And I was like, To what extent do you think that is such a thing, or if I was just responding to signals? I know that's like very specific, but I think in terms of a lot of teenagers, I know a lot of teenagers message me saying that they do the same thing. And I just...
They message you saying they eat because they're bored.
Yeah, eat because they're bored, or just kind of like eat because they're not particularly happy.
Yeah.
And I just find it interesting.
Yeah.
Is that responding to a signal, or is that making a signal that wasn't there?
Yeah. So... to make things slightly more complicated and nuanced, I think there are a couple of questions that I would want to ask from a clinical perspective before I jumped straight to emotional eating, boredom eating, stress, comfort eating. Because I almost everyone that walks into my clinic says, I'm a comfort eater.
Right.
And to some extent, we're all comfort eaters, right? Like, you know, as babies, if we start crying, one of the first things that happens is we get offered food. You know, when we have like celebrations or, you know, big occasions, whether it's weddings or birthdays or funerals or Valentine's Day or whatever, everything is connected to food. So I want to be very careful about over pathologizing eating in response to hunger, eating in response to emotional cues, because ultimately that's a coping mechanism and it's a relatively benign one at that. So sort of taking a step back for a second, keep that in your mind. But first of all, if I were working with someone and they identified as being a comfort eater, emotional eater, whatever they describe that as, I would first of all want to make sure that they are eating adequately throughout the day, nourishing themselves, getting plenty of fun foods in throughout the day, not just putting all that pressure on that pizza that you're going to be eating, you know, on the couch with Netflix later. Because, you know, if you're kind of, what's the word? Yeah, if you're depriving yourself throughout the day, then how is that going to end, right? Like, it's, you probably will eat past the point of comfortable fullness. Or if you, likewise, if you haven't had any like excitement or anything engaging happening throughout your day, maybe that pizza is the most exciting thing that's happened to you all day.
It's very relatable.
Yeah. So I think, so there are a couple of things. We want to make sure that people are honoring their hunger, that they've made peace with food so that they're eating enough, they're eating adequately, they're nourishing themselves throughout the days, they're getting pleasurable foods throughout the day. Then if we've kind of addressed all of those behaviors and people are still find themselves, you know, eating for emotional reasons or to soothe negative emotions or emotional distress, what I wouldn't do is say to someone, so eating food is a coping skill. All right, let's just shit can that. Let's just totally get rid of that.
Yeah.
Because what if they don't have anything else? What if that is
skills?
Yeah, exactly. Right. Yeah. So if you imagine you've got your emotional coping toolkit, you open it up, the only thing is in there is food, and I go in and I take it out. And then you're left with nothing. Well, that's not a great place to be in. So we would work on adding, not taking food away, because like I said, it's a relatively benign coping mechanism, but adding other things in there, adding in self-compassion, adding in maybe mindfulness if that was appropriate, or you know, even just like calling your friend or going to therapy, or you know, just like sometimes lying on the floor, whatever it is that you need to do. Start adding things in, and but also looking at food as maybe giving you a clue that something else is off in your life, something else is off kilter, whether that's your self-care, whether that's sleep, whether that's you haven't been managing stress very well. Just looking at it like, what is this telling me about what else is going on in my life?
Because Honey and I talk quite a bit about self-care. So what is your, do you have like a go-to self-care thing? Like when things, I mean, I know you have a million things on right now. What do you, because sometimes when you're really, really busy, like food is a quick, immediate comfort, right? So,
But I would just say, so, you know, in my capacity as an intuitive eating counselor and nutritionist, like, you know, the second principle of intuitive eating is honoring your hunger. And so sometimes we don't necessarily have the option to make the choice that might make us feel amazing and like stave off chronic illness for the rest of our lives, but we actually just need to eat something in that moment. And that to me is the sort of, that is the priority over, you know, oh, I'm just going to wait another 3 hours until I can get that green juice or whatever. Like, actually, the priority is that you eat something over not eating anything. Mm-hmm. So if you're stressed out and you don't have time to prepare a meal, please still eat something. Like, it's really important, even if you just have to grab, I don't know,
a bag of crisps.
A bag of crisps, mm-hmm. right? But, you know, if you can grab a bag of crisps and have an apple, that's fine too. You know, like, there are options. So what's my self-care? Yeah, I've been really crap at this lately with the book stuff, yeah. But I do prioritize going to therapy every week, which I realize is a privilege. But yeah, I try and make time for that. And exercise is really important.
And I get on board with the exercise classes when they're like, oh, you know, like, be your best self. Da-da-da-da-da. And I'm like, fine, yeah, I will be. Mm-hmm, ready. But I completely lost it when this bar three instructor, we were doing, I don't know, squats or something at 6 a.m. or whatever time it was. I mean, it was an ungodly hour. But then she said, find your inner hero. There are many times I need my inner hero. I need my inner hero to come through at certain points in my life. This is not one of them. I do not want to lose my one chance with my inner hero on squats. I'm sorry. And I just couldn't take
it. Yeah, like, I'm not wasting it. Please.
I couldn't take it. Seriously, and she was like, what is wrong with you? When I was like in stitches on the floor being like, oh my God, I'm going to cry. Yeah.
I feel like even though like, it breaks my heart, I feel like we should wrap up.
What do you get asked all the time that you're like, oh. Well, no more. I want to say it one last time and then that's it.
I think we've kind of talked about this already, but it's really just to hammer home to people this idea that we have been systematically taught that we cannot trust our bodies and that in order to function, we need to have these external rules that dictate what, when, and how much we should be eating. And to really recognize that that is a very deliberate patriarchal move to keep women small, to keep us occupied, to keep us just in our heads. I mean, think about how much shit you would get done if you weren't worrying about calories or how much you moved your body or that freaking micronutrient that doesn't really matter.
Some food, I know, right? I've been thinking about that carrot for this entire report. I've got to get that carrot.
But yeah, just really learning that actually we can trust our bodies. And when we do, yes, it's a little bit of work, but holy shit, it is so freeing. Mm-hmm. And it allows you to get on with the things that really need your attention, that are really important, these wider social justice issues that we need to all be kind of working on collectively. So that's what I want people to know.
That's an amazing place to end. Laura, where can we find you?
So on socials, it's just at Laura Thomas PhD. My book is called Just Eat It, How Intuitive Eating Can Help You Get Your Shit Together Around Food. My personal website is laurathomasphd.co.uk, where you can find my podcast, Don't Salt My Game. My clinic is London Center for Intuitive Eating.co.uk, and you can probably find me in the Medical Sciences Library at UCL.
Brilliant. Laura, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much for listening to the Body Protest podcast, brought to you by the Pink Protest.
We would love it if you left us a review and some stars, preferably 5, on Apple Podcasts.
Preferably.
It will help other people find our podcast and join our Body Protest family.
Honey, where can we find you on social?
Well, I'm on Instagram at HoneyKinney, and you should also follow the Pink Protest at Pink Protest. Nadia, where can we find you?
I'm at nadia.craddock on Instagram, and you can also listen to my little work podcast, Appearance Matters, the podcast, where Jay Pernell and I talk about the body image research with some of the experts in the field.
This podcast was brought to you by the Pink Protest and produced by the wonderful Scarlett Curtis.
And thanks to our editor, Shola.
Thank you. Bye.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.